You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Starting tomorrow, a new sweeping anti-abortion bill goes into effect as law in Texas, House Bill 7. It's aimed squarely at how people get abortion pills in Texas from out of state. So what exactly does HB 7 do? How will it be enforced? And what does it mean for patients, providers, and the broader fight over abortion pills nationwide? Joining us to help us sort through this new law and its implications, we're joined by Shefali Luthra. She is a reproductive health reporter for The 19th, a nonprofit newsroom that covers gender, politics, and policy. She's also the author of the book Undue Burden, which chronicles the health consequences of overturning Roe v. Wade. And Shefali, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me.
And also, we're joined by the Center for Reproductive Rights Interim Director of Litigation, Autumn Katz. And Autumn Katz, welcome to The Source.
Thanks so much.
So, Shefali, tell us what is HB 7? What does it do?
HB 7 essentially authorizes private lawsuits. Anyone can file them for a minimum $100,000 against people who mail or distribute or make available abortion medications in Texas. It does not target people who are pregnant and use these medications, but it creates a new lever to try and target people who make these pills available and have become a really critical source of abortion care in Texas and other places with abortion bans.
So I can, if I just hear about somebody getting abortion pills from out of state, they got it mailed to them, then I can sue that abortion, like a New York abortion doctor or somebody or the manufacturer of those pills?
Those are the targets. And in theory, you would want more than simply having heard about someone. You would want some kind of evidence to present in court. But exactly that. You, as a Texan, would be able to sue a doctor in New York or a doctor in California or Massachusetts or potentially a manufacturer or distributor. There are some carve-outs, and then there are legal complications that we'll get into, other states' laws, how they interact with this. But what abortion opponents in Texas are hoping for is that the creation of these lawsuits will penalize and ultimately halt medical providers in other states from making abortion medications available to Texans.
Well, Autumn Katz at the Center for Reproductive Rights, what is your reaction to this law?
I think everything that Shefali said is exactly right. This is Texas's latest attempt to try and cut off telehealth abortion, which has been a lifeline for Texans, for people in the state who are not able to leave to access abortion care. And this bill is the latest attempt to try and cut off that lifeline and to try and control what doctors and manufacturers in other states are doing. And so that's why it's so important that people understand what's happening. And I think the other key point I just want to reiterate is that if you are a person who gets an abortion in Texas, you cannot be sued under this law.
All right. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. I really would like to hear, if we can, from somebody who has used telehealth to acquire abortion medication. How has it worked for you? Are you concerned about this? Or just in general, what is your take on this? But Autumn Katz, so we know what the bill says it's going to do, but what will it actually do? I mean, I can't sue an abortion doctor in New York because they have a shield law. And plus, they're in New York. I mean, what really can you do with this new law? And we've already have a law in Texas that makes abortion pills illegal, don't we?
Texas has already banned abortion, absolutely. And so, again, this is just yet another attempt by the state to try and go after telehealth and to try and cut off people from accessing this critical care. The difference, I think, between Texas's existing abortion bans and this one is that it's incentivizing private citizens, right? Rather than Texas officials enforcing the abortion ban, this is incentivizing private citizens to sue and to go after somebody because of this $100,000 penalty.
Well, Shefali Luthra at the 19th, we had a similar law, SB 8, where they outlawed abortion in Texas, and they had a similar bounty civil lawsuit law. It had a catastrophic impact on It was the heartbeat bill in Texas and basically stopping abortion. But when it was challenged in court by Dr. Alan Braid, the judges all threw it out. So why does this make sense?
What you're hitting on is actually a really interesting source of tension amongst a lot of abortion opponents in Texas as well. And I spoke to many of them who were very skeptical of HB 7 for exactly this reason. They said, you know, SB 8 did not result in successful lawsuits against abortion providers. So why should this? But the context we're in is different and the players are very different as well. This is adding another tool into this already existing battle between states, looking at Texas's laws versus New York's laws or Massachusetts's laws. And in some ways, I think that this is perhaps even more important as a way for us to understand how that battle proceeds. If we do see more lawsuits filed under HB 7, does that strengthen the pre-existing cases against doctors in California or New York? Does that accelerate the extent to which the Supreme Court weighs in on this? And does that potentially at some point chill providers because they simply don't know if they will be able to, you know, have to pay that $100,000 potentially infinite times if there are, you know, unlimited lawsuits? And does that simply become too much a cross to bear? I think even tomorrow when this takes effect, we'll be in the very early stages of figuring out how exactly this affects providers and access to care.
Well, Shefali, in your reporting at the 19th, what have you heard from abortion pill providers or organizations that are very active in trying to serve women who are in states like Texas where we don't have abortion freedom? What do they say they're going to do?
They say that they do not intend to stop providing care. They will keep mailing abortion medications to people in Texas who seek them out. They are at the same time, though, monitoring the lawsuits that have been filed against their peers and colleagues and that will continue to be filed. And I think that's really important. We know that there are some very creative, very prolific anti-abortion activists and lawyers in Texas who have really been on the front lines of trying to get laws like HB 7 not only implemented, but ultimately enforced. And so they'll see what happens. For now, access to care won't change, but I think there's a real possibility that if some of these cases ultimately end up being successful, they may rethink that strategy.
Autumn Katz, in Texas, of course, you know, we have outlawed abortion, yet abortion seems to be still very common in Texas, specifically because people are able to access abortion pills from out of state. So, I mean, is that right? Is that what's happening?
Absolutely. And I want to emphasize the fact that the state has banned abortion doesn't mean that Texans don't need abortions. People have always needed abortions. They always will need abortions. And I think it's really important to note that medication abortion, telehealth abortion, is extraordinarily safe. It's effective, and it has been widely used all across the United States by about 7.5 million people. And so this is just the latest attempt by Texans to scare people, to intimidate and bully providers, and to try and incentivize them to stop providing care and to create this atmosphere of fear. And I don't think it's going to work. I think abortion providers want to care for patients. They want to help people in Texas, and they will continue to do so.
Right. So, Autumn, I've seen this from criticism from pro-abortion groups across the state. They're saying that this bill actually changes really nothing in reality. All it does is stoke the coals, the embers of this atmosphere of fear in Texas.
Exactly. I think this has been always part of the anti-abortion movement's larger strategy, is to attack abortion pills and to create this atmosphere of fear and to scare people and to make them afraid of getting care, of accessing care. People are afraid even to look up information about abortion and to find information online. And that's exactly what they want. They want people to be afraid. They want to cut off this lifeline of telehealth. And they're trying every tactic in the book to try and do that.
And so, Autumn, we know that, as you said earlier, we heard earlier, the person who gets the pills and uses them, they are not subject to this law. So they shouldn't have feel any fear. But maybe they're worried about their name will be on a record somewhere. Eventually down the line, they could be charged with something. Who knows in this world that we live in now, Autumn? Is that a real concern?
Absolutely. I think we've seen that all along, even before this bill hasn't gone into effect. And we've seen there's so much confusion and fear in Texas about whether and how people can get help. But I want people to know that telehealth is available in Texas. I want people to know that. And I want people to know, I said this already, but I want people to know that it is really safe and effective, and that it has been used by millions of folks all across the United States, both in states where abortion is legal and in states like Texas where abortion has been banned.
Shefali Luther, is this the first time a state has done a law like this?
Yes, and attacking medication abortion is not new. This has been a really high priority for the anti-abortion movement, essentially since the fall of Roe, when it became very clear that telehealth had become this essential source of care for people living in states with bans. But no state has taken this exact approach of these really broadly available civil suits. And that's what makes this law so aggressive and in some ways such an important test of whether the anti-abortion movement strategy will work, whether it will instill fear, and whether it will potentially change when and how people get care.
Taking a break here. The number is 833-877-8255. If you want to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues after this.
Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
As 2025 comes to a close, the value of trustworthy journalism has never been greater. TPR remains dedicated to delivering real, reliable, trustworthy news. We are proud to be here for you, and today, we need you to be here for us. Without federal funding to help shoulder the costs, your support is essential on the road ahead, and we're counting on you. Visit tpr.org to make your end-of-year gift today.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. New law goes into effect, House Bill 7. It will make it illegal for, actually they're going to use a civil measure. They can sue people who send abortion pills, distribute abortion pills into the state of Texas. How does that work? Will it work? And what does it mean for people who are seeking some sort of abortion solution in their life? The number to call in is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to Randall on the phones. And Randall, you're on the air.
Hey, I had something typed up here, and right before the break, y'all kind of shot it down because of the way you were explaining things, but I'm gonna go with this anyway. Where did these drugs and substances land? Like the schedule of drugs or banned substances, you know, like cocaine and heroin are Schedule One, right? Just possessing them is a felony. Okay, so if these drugs are lower on the list, how are these civil lawsuits able to happen in light of HIPAA protections? Now, you've already mentioned that in the particular, if a lawsuit is filed, the lawsuit is not filed against the woman who is taking the drugs, but against the person or persons who supplied the drugs to the woman. Is that correct?
Well, Randall, let's find out. So Autumn Katz with the Center for Reproductive Rights, what can you tell us?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's who would be targeted, is either a manufacturer or a doctor or somebody who's mailing pills. And I think you're hitting on exactly the right point, which is that this is attempting to compromise people's privacy and what somebody might decide to do in the privacy of their own home in ways that are really disturbing and offensive to Texans. And so I have the same concerns that you do.
But the pills themselves are not a controlled substance. In Louisiana, they've made them a controlled substance. Just to have possession of them is against the law. I mean, I have abortion pills in my office, which I bought when I was in Mexico on a story. So they're, but I'm not breaking the law by having them. Shefali, Luthrop, what can you tell us about, you know, just having the pills?
Louisiana law is really interesting because it was one of those other attempts to try and target the mailing of medication abortion. And what happened is it didn't stop mailing and telehealth from happening in Louisiana, but it instead made it a risk to have these drugs on your person. And it really threatened, for instance, people who use them for miscarriage care, because abortion medications are used for all sorts of things, including managing a pregnancy loss. And so I think that's something that we also need to be really aware of. In Texas, there have been a lot of efforts to say that these lawsuits and this law targets medication abortion when it is intended to be used for abortion. But that's a really tricky thing to figure out, especially because miscarriage and abortion are medically indistinguishable. And so that's something that we really need to be aware of and monitoring when we think about those exact privacy concerns that Autumn just raised.
So the future of the abortion pill is in question. The FDA is now looking at it again under the Trump. They have opened a safety review. This seems to be like, even though we've heard promises before from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and from Trump that they wouldn't do this, but it does seem like this could happen down the line. Autumn Katz, your reaction?
That's a great point. I think abortion opponents are attacking abortion pills on multiple fronts, right? They have lawsuits pending in the courts against the FDA to try and restrict access to medication abortion or get it taken off the market. They're trying in the legislature. We saw, you know, Louisiana has tried to make these drugs a controlled substance. Texas has passed this new law. And then we're seeing these attacks, these politically motivated attacks at the federal level as well with this supposed investigation into the safety of mifepristone, even though we know that mifepristone is extremely safe and effective and has been used for decades safely all across the United States. So I do think it's important to kind of understand this Texas bill within the larger context of all of the different attacks that are happening and trying to get medication abortion, not only in Texas, but frankly, all across the United States, trying to get medication abortion out of the hands of patients who need it.
And Shefali Luthrop, how unusual is it for the FDA to reopen the safety profile of a drug like mifepristone after 25 years of use?
It's quite strange because of everything that we know and what the years and years of data shows us, which is that these are very safe, very effective drugs that are safer than a lot of other less regulated medications. I do think it's worth really keeping an eye on what actually happens with a review like this. This is something the secretary has been talking about for quite some time, but he really only talks about it when prompted by anti-abortion lawmakers and activists. And when I speak to a lot of abortion opponents, a lot of them have voiced a lot of frustration because they feel like they have been hearing a lot of talk about this review, but that there hasn't been any change. And I think there's a really open question. The Trump administration knows that abortion restrictions are very unpopular, but they also understand that abortion opponents are a key part of their political constituency. And so at some point, they will have to choose whose side they take. And I don't think they have necessarily made that decision, or at the very least, we don't know which direction they'll go.
Autumn Katz, there's also renewed interest from the administration to revive the Comstock Act, which would prohibit the mailing of abortion pills through the U.S. mail. But we have all these other things like FedEx and Amazon. You know, would that actually prevent the being able to obtain the abortion pill if they did bring back the Comstock Act?
I think that's an open question. I don't know that I have the answer to that. I think enforcing this Victorian era law, so for folks that don't know what the Comstock Act is, it's a law that was passed, you know, in the 1800s that prohibits the mailing of anything that can be used that's anti-sex or anti-vice.
And so and abortion even birth control information.
Correct. Exactly. And so abortion pills fall within this prohibition, and the fact that anti-abortion opponents are now trying to revive this zombie law from, you know, the Victorian era, I think, again, just speaks to how they are trying everything at every level to try and get mifepristone out of the hands of the people that need that care. And I think if the federal government started enforcing Comstock in this way and interpreting it to ban the mailing of pills, I think it's a real open-ended question as to what providers would do and what the result would be. But it's certainly something to be aware of and to pay attention to.
Shefali Luthra, so if a Texas resident used telehealth from a Shield Law state in order to obtain the abortion pills, what sort of evidence would a private plaintiff need in order to bring a successful HB7 lawsuit?
That's a good question, because we haven't yet seen a successful lawsuit. But there are active lawsuits right now that are relying on a different potential violation. They say that wrongful death, which is typically used for deaths caused by negligence, they are arguing that the abortions were a form of death. And so in those cases, things we have seen are people's text messages are sometimes used. We have seen the labels on medication bottles be brought forth as evidence. But I think as those cases progress, we'll get a better sense of how far-reaching these investigations could be and just how much people's privacy is ultimately violated.
So, Autumn Katz, moving forward with this new law going into effect, what advice do you have for young women in Texas, women in Texas who want to reach out to find an abortion pill provider? And then how would they make sure that they're not going to be caught up in this?
Yeah, I want people in Texas to know that abortion pills are available both via telehealth and online. And I can give a few resources if people are interested in just learning more about medication abortion. One great resource is plancpills.org. And then if people want to know where they can go to get an abortion, whether that's through telehealth or through a state where they can travel, where abortion is legal, there's a great website called ineedana.com. And then the other thing that I would say is that there are resources out there if somebody does find themselves to be the target of some kind of investigation or lawsuit. There are plenty of resources out there to help people. Two great resources are the Repro Legal Helpline, and people can find that at reprolegalhelpline.org, and then the Abortion Defense Network, and that's abortiondefensenetwork.org. So there are a lot of great resources online for people to find out more information, to understand where they can get abortion pills, to understand where they can travel, and to understand that there are legal resources out there to help them.
Shefali Luthra, in your reporting at the 19th, does it seem like just more Texas, you know, people who live outside of Texas and, you know, they see what's going on here? Or do they see this as, you know, when they overturned Roe, the argument was this was to give the power back to the states, but this seems to go beyond that.
I think it's very clear that the idea that overturning Roe would leave abortion in the hands of individual states has just not borne out to be the reality. And every person I talk to and I speak to folks around the country understands deeply that these are questions of individual states interacting with each other, and that what happens in one state affects the rights and realities of people who live somewhere else. And that will continue to be the case as these questions unfold in the coming years.
Shefali Luthra is a reproductive health reporter for the 19th, a nonprofit newsroom covering gender, politics, and policy. She's also the author of the book Undue Burden, which chronicles health consequences from the overturning of Roe v. Wade. We also were speaking with Autumn Katz. She is the Center for Reproductive Rights Interim Director of Litigation. Thank you both for coming on the air today and helping us understand this new law. Appreciate that. And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
The This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.